stories are on millions of Americans' minds these days, and the product that come from cracking plants such as this at the El Segundo Standard Oil Refinery here in the Los Angeles area of Southern California. We're in the midst of an energy crisis. We all know what that means. Lower temperatures at home, slower driving on the highways, lots of canceled trips these days, and I imagine it's difficult to find jerry cans and spare gasoline to put in them. We're in the midst of an energy crisis we've been talking about on the program for some time, the spinoff from the energy crisis in the petrochemical industry that, after all, hires about 25% of the labor force of the United States. Here in this cracking plant, this refinery, and this big cracking tower behind us is where it all begins. Matter of fact, we're standing here with one of the public relations officers of this Standard Oil Refinery in El Segundo, Bob Ray. Bob, thanks a lot for chatting with us, and I'd like to talk to you about this big facility behind us. You say this is where the crude oil comes directly from the wellheads here, the pipelines in local fields, and this is where the refining process begins.
That's correct. The starting place for the refining of crude oil.
What essentially is going on inside this big black piece of equipment behind us?
Oil that's going to be fractionated into feedstocks for additional processing is heated in the furnace. From the furnace, the hot oil goes into the fractionating column that you see right behind us, and those pieces are separated then by a fractionating process for further refining.
You don't see any visible pipes just right here, but are there a lot of pipes underground in this facility, buried under the ground?
Very few pipes are underground in our refinery.
Is that right?
In
says it's time for something to happen. Yeah, some of the workmen are probably shift changes or something. Because this plant does run, I understand, 24 hours a day.
That's right.
365 days
That's
a year.
Correct. This particular unit runs approximately 2 years between shutdowns.
Now, where does all of this crude oil that comes into this primary facility right here where it's first being treated, where does it come from?
That varies from day to day. But in today, we're feeding mostly domestic crude from the local fields, Inglewood, Torrance, various Southern California areas. We do still have a very small amount of Arabian crude available, and we're processing some Indonesian crude that, for which our supply is also dwindling.
Is there any more Arabian crude on the way, or have you already received the last shipment, to your knowledge?
It's my understanding that the last shipment on the West Coast was received on Thanksgiving Day or the day prior, approximately last week.
And you would only get it from the West Coast. You wouldn't get it transshipped by tanker or truck from, say, Houston or an East Coast port.
That's correct.
Well, then, is there any other overseas source? For instance, are there other crude oils coming in from Venezuela that you would use in this plant, let's say, or from
the North African countries? We have in times past, and I suspect that this situation may change again. As I say, from day to day, we really don't always know. We make daily plans, weekly plans, monthly plans, and then they're all subject to revision before the next day comes.
So far as you know, then, you presently don't really have any idea that this would have to be closed down. You do have crude oil that you have access to, even though it is not coming from the source of the Arab countries.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You don't foresee any closed down or operating at partial capacity of this plant?
I don't see any closed down. The plant will undoubtedly have to be restricted if sufficient crude is not available, and we aren't always able to run at maximum capacity because of crude supply.
Well, talking for a moment about the crude itself and the products that derive from it. Now, in this tower, you mentioned that there are various compartments in it, and fuel oils and crude and on up to gasoline has various density and the like. And that is the gasoline and some of the lighter, more exotic fuels, ethane, methane, and so on, very lightweight, where the kerosene is very heavy. Now, you probably have literally hundreds of products that go out of a plant such as this. Are President Nixon's proposals in the energy crisis and the energy board, and that is a heavier emphasis upon fuel oils, perhaps diesel, and a cut down in gasoline and so on, going to mean serious alterations in what goes on at a refinery such as this?
We can make a very varied mix of products, but we can't make both gasoline and fuel oil in maximize the production of both from a given crude oil. We can make one or the other. The diesel fuel may have to suffer to make gasoline, it may have to suffer to make fuel oil. But the downstream refining facilities give us a major flexibility within limits of the refinery component. So we could maximize the production of a given product at the sacrifice of, by sacrificing some of the other.
I understand that when you take a look at a barrel of refined oil, that's the old classical barrel of 42 gallons, not the 55-gallon drum that we were talking about before the program. The statistics I have from the American Petroleum Institute indicate that cars, trucks, and buses use 37.7%, light planes only 0.28%. And it goes on to talk also about jet fuel and naphtha-type jet fuel, military 1.48%, and kerosene, heating mostly rural, only 1.4%. Yet President Nixon, I understand, originally proposed that up to 40% cutback should come into private aviation, and a serious cutback in the commercial aviation, though not nearly so much proportionately, and this tremendous shift over into heating and fuel oils, diesel oil and the like. What percentage of the plant capacity here would you say goes to jet fuel or the more exotic type fuels?
I don't have a good number on that. Our refinery is oriented to making gasoline, jet fuel, both commercial and military jet, and fuel oils. And these are our big volume products. The jet fuel, we've been making enough for our market, and up to now, and looking ahead, picture's not quite as certain, of course.
Many people in the general public, back at the beginning of some of the phase 1, 2, 3, 4 price controls and then the eventual warnings by the major oil producers, began to accuse the major producers of attempting to squeeze out the small businessman and the small independent, the smaller oil companies. What is the comment you would have about that from the point of view of a person working for Standard Oil?
Well, I'm not really qualified to answer a question like that as a company spokesman. As an individual watching the marketing situation, however, I see even our own company's outlets are being shut down, and it's purely the basis of supply and demand. The things that are economically attractive will continue to stay in business, and those that are not profitable will go out of business, whether they're company or independent. I'm certain that our company believes that competition is a way of life, and we've lived with it for many, many years, and I don't feel that our company had any reason or action, has taken any action to...
The retort that I saw in some very widely circulated editorial or opinion sections, or even ads purchased by major oil producers such as Mobil, had a beautiful one in the Los Angeles Times, that brought out the point that the refineries were operating to capacity, that they had never dropped below this capacity, but it was a point that the increasing demand had simply overtaken and bypassed that capacity. Is that true where this plant is concerned? You operate at pretty much a static capacity without violent fluctuations one way or the other?
That is true so long as we have crude available. Quite recently, crude availability has been a problem, but capacity is a sometime thing, depending upon the requirements of the market and the availability of crude, capacity can change. Also, capacity presupposes everything is running 100% of the time, which of course isn't true. Just as your car and mine has to go into the shop from time to time for some maintenance, these units have to be turned down, shut down, overhauled. Our first consideration in the refinery is, can it be done safely? And we've determined that this particular unit can run for 2 years, approximately, before it, in a safe manner, before it has to be shut down and checked out. It might run 3 years, but we don't want to take that chance. So we shut it down about every 2 years.
Do you feel then that the refinery capacity of the United States as a whole, in general, is operating just about at its limits at present time?
I'm in no position to make that kind of comment on that. If the companies say that, I would believe at least most of the companies that I've had any contact with, I've found to be reputable, and if they say it, I believe that that's true.
Is Standard a member of the American Petroleum Institute? I'm pretty sure they
are,
and have representatives there. According to their meeting that took place in Houston recently, a quarter century ago, the United States had more than 400 refineries, and today we have only 250, but the difference is in technology. And the fact that 400 included many, many smaller ones all over West Texas, here in Southern California and elsewhere, and that the combined capacity of those 250 is approximately 13 million barrels a day, but that is only, that's 4 million barrels a day less than American consumption in petroleum products. That the difference was made up by foreign imports and by a growing dependency upon Arab oil in particular. And of course, we know what happened now in the Middle Eastern crisis. That got cut off. And so early this year, after the completion of one 150,000-barrel-a-day facility at Joliet, Illinois, the oil industry didn't have one new refinery under construction in the United States. Now, do you know of any plans in this area, for example, not just Standard, but any other oil company, for the construction of new refineries or for the enlargement of the capacity of present refineries?
I know no new refineries being projected for this area. Our refinery has just undertaken an expansion which will permit us to provide approximately half of the fuel oil requirements for the Southern California Edison system in this area. And this will be operating on imported crude oil, which is amenable to desulfurization. Domestic crude isn't amenable to this process. Now, I think there's one, I don't have the basic reference, but I have learned, read very recently, that in the United States, something like 3 or 4 new grassroots refineries have been built in the last 4 or 5 years. I'm sorry I don't have better details on that, but there's been a little misinformation on that, apparently, that I can't clarify any further than that except raise the question in my mind and yours, just where they are.
Well, Bob, the energy crisis in some ways is a kind of a vicious cycle, and to illustrate that point, I'd like to come back in just a minute after taking a break and talk to you just as a private citizen. Even though you work in a refinery, you don't have any special access to gasoline or fuel oil or electricity than I have. And when you go home at night, you and your family have to be cognizant that you're in the middle of an energy crisis, even though you may work around millions of gallons of this stuff all day long. You brought up, I think, one important point, especially the big cities and interurban complexes like Los Angeles, and that was Southern California Edison. I heard the leader of Southern California Edison, one of the chairmen of the board, I don't know his name, talking before the governor's environmental conference in the Los Angeles hotel, where it was the conference on clean air. And he was talking about low and high sulfur fuel. And he was talking about pollution and anti-pollution measures. And he used the phrase, be it ever so humble, there is no place. Meaning that wherever he went, there was no place for them to build an oil-burning or a coal-burning electrical plant. Or nuclear plant, either one, to produce the energy needed by these burgeoning, growing megalopolises of ours. I'd like to come back in just a minute and talk about that. But in the meantime, I'll take time out to tell our viewers about the Plain Truth magazine. In the Plain Truth magazine in the past, we have run many special issues such as this one on the energy crisis. Now, as soon as the Middle Eastern crisis broke, and I did give orders on a special issue in the Plain Truth magazine to our writers from offices around the world, we began to address ourselves to what was happening inside the United States, the spinoff from the energy crisis, not only in terms of shortness of fuel oils and cutbacks in electrical power, slowing down our automobiles, but what it was going to mean to the entire labor force, the economy, joblessness, maybe getting up into 7, 8, 10, or even 11% or higher. Are we going to have millions of men on the streets in the United States out of a job as a result of shuddering impacts to our entire economic system in the wake of the Middle Eastern blow-up? You'll really be informed if you have your name on a mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine. And every single month we have articles that deal with these current situations as well as projections on into the future, years before it happens. We have the record in this magazine, a unique one, I think, of talking about the energy crisis in a global manner, the overview of the whole picture, years before it became reality, and you reached up one day to turn down a thermostat in your home. Write for the Plain Truth magazine. The address is Box 111, Pasadena, California, Canadian viewers, Box 44, Vancouver, B.C. Plain Truth is absolutely free of charge. There is no price. Well, Bob, we're talking here in front of the Standard Oil El Segundo refinery. This is where it all begins. Yet it takes electrical energy to run a refinery. It takes fuel oil to even bring about the heating process to run a refinery. You're using a great deal of energy here, water. It goes back out into the system, greatly heated. We've talked about this in the past, and the ecology, the ecological imbalance of technologies, it intrudes into a life support system upon which we live. And the man I mentioned, high up in the echelon of Southern California Edison, was trying to point up to the American public how incongruous it is for environmentalists to become so terribly concerned, even from the point of view of a view out the window. Now, this is not a really beautiful view. I have to say that even the oil companies have gone to great lengths to paint their tanks blue and the rosy hues and so on to try to make them look a little more attractive than the black and the rust of yesteryear. Nobody really wants to live right across the street from a refinery. Not from the standpoint of the noise. You mentioned you've had to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on noise reduction. And we stand here and we talk and we hear aircraft going over, and that's another problem of our society. But from the point of view of the appearance, of the way it looks. Well, a man of Edison Company said that nobody in Southern California wants to live across the street from one of these oil or these diesel or these coal-burning electrical plants. And so they say, take your plant and go put it out in the high desert. He says, you go out in the high desert, people out there say, look, you'll ruin our ecology, take it and stick it over there in Seal Beach or someplace. Now you say that these companies are going to have to depend more heavily upon fuel oils, and that apparently the low-sulfur, high-sulfur squabbles about our clean environment, our clean air, are largely going to be abandoned in favor of whatever kind of oil or fuels they can receive. You made a comment that I think the average American knows nothing about, I'd like to address myself to, and that is that apparently our domestic crude is a higher sulfur content kind of an oil or a crude oil than the Arabian oil. Is that basically true?
That's not true.
No. It's the other way around.
It's the other way around.
I see.
Arabian oil has higher sulfur content than most of the domestic crude which we have been running at this refinery.
So then, actually, if we didn't have to depend upon them at all, we were totally self-dependent, we ought to be at one giant step ahead in the pollution battle, because our domestic crude is lower sulfur content.
Well, we have to think not in terms of the crude oil so much as the products that we make from the crude oil. The sulfur content of the crude oil, of the fuel oil, that would be manufactured from domestic crudes will exceed the limits set by the Los Angeles County Air Pollution Control District, and most of our market is in Los Angeles County, for sulfur content of fuel oil. However, Arabian crude and other crudes from other areas can be desulfurized to meet the requirements of the Air Pollution Control District. And I suspect that I don't entirely agree with you that we're going to have to abandon all efforts at clean air. There may be some periods when variances will have to be obtained so that power companies can burn fuel oil which contains sulfur in excess of that permitted by the rule. But we made major gains in air pollution in our, after safety, the very first thing that our refinery considers is, can we do an operation in compliance with the rules? And the rules relating to air pollution are one that we spend a lot of time obeying and following. And I would hate to see, in the long run, an abandonment of the gains that we've made. So I don't think we're really as bad off. The ecologists, the environmentalists, don't have this concern thing to bother them with, I think, over the long pull. Although there may be some periods where the sulfur content of fuel oil will have to exceed, in order to keep the lights burning, will have to exceed that permitted by local regulations.
How has the energy crisis affected you personally as a private citizen, Bob? What little ways do you notice that it's is coming right into your own home and your own personal life?
This last weekend, we had planned a trip. We didn't take it. We turned our thermostat down and sat around the house with jackets and long-sleeved shirts and so on. My wife says, we're going to have to do it this way. And I agree.
You know, I imagine the smog content in Los Angeles was so far below its normal Sunday levels as a result of millions of people that did the same thing all over the United States on the first no-selling Sunday in our history, I guess, that in one way we're making giant strides toward combating air pollution just by traveling less and slowing down.
I think this is a blessing in disguise, really. The air is going to be a little cleaner. For this, we know that the automobile is responsible for about 80% of our air pollution in the Los Angeles area. And if we don't operate the automobiles, we're going to cut that down considerably. We won't cut it down completely because a portion of the automobile contribution, of course, comes from the gas tanks and carburetors as the cars are parked. And so we're not going to eliminate the pollution from the automobile completely by leaving them parked.
Well, talking of refineries again, one of the major incentives for the building of new refineries in a major oil company's view is the availability of crude oil. Unless they knew, in effect, that they could have a guarantee of X number of millions of barrels for a certain number of years, no doubt, so that they could operate a plant successfully, and they have used a margin, a rule of thumb, of $2,000 per single barrel of capacity for new plant cost. And that figures out to be about, in a 100,000-barrel-a-day plant, that the smallest considered economically feasible project would be a capital investment of $200 million. What is the barrels-per-day capacity of this plant?
We have a capacity, considering all operations, of about 220,000 barrels a day.
So you're about... more than double, 2.5 times the standard rule of thumb that I just mentioned. Now, in your view, do you believe that we have just about reached national capacity for new refineries unless there is a let-up in Arab oil embargoes? Do you think with our domestic supplies, of course I know about the Alaska pipeline, but do you think that we are going to go in and we're going to see a large number of new refineries so that we really do become self-dependent and we whip the energy crisis on into the late 1970s?
I don't know exactly what you're referring to, but if you're thinking about crude availability, within the past couple of weeks, I've seen a report that indicates that over the hill here, about a mile away, there's the edge of a reservoir under Santa Monica Bay that may have 60 million barrels. There's areas in Santa Barbara Channel that there's oil to be found. There's new field just recently discovered up near Taft, near the Elk Hills.
A new field, in addition to the known reserves and naval
By Elk Hills, and there have been other fields up there. They're different bearing strata. I'm not a geologist. I don't know much about the details, except that this is at a different depth and is in a different oil-bearing strata. So their oil will be found, and the refineries such as this and the other refineries in this area are undoubtedly here because this is where the market is. And it's simpler to transport the raw material, a single product, to the area of the market than it is to manufacture in some remote area and then maintain quality control and separation of the products to the marketing area from a remote manufacturing site. So I have visualized that additional refineries as they are built and the many deterrents that are imposed on them are overcome, that any new refineries that might be built will be near major marketing areas.
Then there really appears to be enough incentive, first from government relaxation, even in military leases such as the Elk Hills area, legislation to bring in the Alaskan pipeline, new fields that could be discovered, that perhaps there will be sufficient incentive to build new refineries to improve or to increase our capacity without dependency upon Arab crude.
I believe that's true, yes.
I think I've said this to our audiences many times. I've said that the United States is in far better condition to survive an energy crisis by readjustments inside our own society and our economy than any of these other countries. Europe depending 96% upon imported oil, Japan 98%, a large slice of that from the Arab countries. As a private citizen, do you concur with that? We can ride this out.
That's true. I think we're fortunate that the Arabs chose this time, perhaps,
instead of 10 years
later. Instead of 10 years down the road when we might have been in a position where there would be, we had no alternative.
Might have been better if they'd chosen the exact time when we first asked for the first shipload of Arab oil to come over here. And then we wouldn't have had had this shock to the system as it is.
Well, our company and our industry has been making noises and complaining and testimony and witnessing to the public since 1955 about energy supply. And it's gratifying now, even at this late date, to find now that some of the legislators and the public are finally understanding what we've been saying. And I'm optimistic over the long run that things are going to get better. But in the short run, I think we may expect sometimes that we'll turn on the light switch and it may not be there. There may not be any lights. And we'll be in a bit of a squeeze because people didn't listen.
Well, thank you very much, Bob Ray, for being the guest on the program today. As Bob has said, he found that he had to stay home on one Sunday and probably enjoyed it just about as much as a lot of us are used to the hassle of getting into those automobiles and driving a few hundred miles on a Sunday and then getting into that long bumper-to-bumper traffic jam on the way home. Actually, I think many Americans are finding out the quality of life can be even just a little bit better if we slow down and take a long look at that trip we're planning, or maybe just even picnic in the backyard of the living room with our own family. Well, the energy crisis is here. You need to know what its true effects are going to be in the broad global term as well as in the private sector in your own home. If you want to be truly informed, be sure to get your name on the mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine. Specials such as this on the energy crisis coming your way every single month in the Plain Truth. 52 pages, full color, free of charge. The address in just a moment. Till next time, at the El Segundo Refinery for the Standard Oil Company, our guest has been Bob Ray. Thank you, Bob. Gunner Ted Armstrong. Goodbye, friends.
You have seen Garner Ted Armstrong. Send your letters to Ambassador College, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Or Post Office Box 44, Vancouver, BC.